We're continuing in our conversation of spiritual perspectives. I'm sitting here with Daniel. Daniel, how old are you?
22.
And how long have you been studying Torah, Daniel?
About a year and a half.
About a year and a half. We're going to be speaking about a Torah subject, but you won't recognize it as a Torah subject until we try to tie it up at the end. Let's start with the concept of the All, A-L-L. Is there such a concept as All? Could we say it as an All, Daniel?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, fine. And can there be anything other than the All?
No.
No, why not?
Well, by definition, the All is the All.
Right, you would have to include whatever else there would be, right?
Right.
Okay, now where is the All?
Must be all around us.
Around, how about through us?
I guess so.
Be everywhere, right?
Right.
And there's nothing other than the All. How many Alls are there?
Only one.
Only one. So, when I point at you, am I pointing at the All?
I guess so, in a sense.
Would you explain what you mean by in a sense?
Well, maybe you're pointing to me as, I don't want to say part of the All, but the All kind of filtered down.
Filtered down, but even if it's filtered down, it's still the All.
Right.
It's filtered up or down, it's still All, right?
Essentially.
Why don't you want to say the word part? You said you don't want to say a part of the All.
Because if you're going to say by definition the All is the All, then you can't break it up into fragments.
That's right. Very good. Well, you're saving the whole job. That's the whole point of the conversation. Okay. So let's give you a couple of illustrations and to emphasize what you just said. First off, let's in the area of perspectives, can you make two circles, one with each thumb and one with each finger, hold it up in front of you as if it's a rifle, pointing at an object, and look at the object with one eye open through those two sights, okay? Okay, now, would you hit the object?
Yeah.
Okay, now follow the instructions carefully. Leave your hands where they are, close the eye that's open, and open the other eye. Fire. Would you hit it?
Don't think so.
Why not?
Can't see what I'm aiming at.
But it's you didn't move the rifle. Oh, now you're moving the rifle.
Yeah.
What? Would you hit it?
Oh, yeah.
Explain.
I didn't move the rifle.
So what does that mean? Explain so that people can understand.
When I had the first eye open, I could see perfectly.
Right.
And then when I closed it and opened the other one, since I didn't move the rifle and the object remained there, then it made sense that I would still be able to hit it, provided the object stayed still.
Right, but the point was it didn't seem like you would.
Right.
Okay, so what the point is, when we change the way we look at something, we change our perspective, we're changing the way we look at it, we're not changing what we're looking at. Okay? So we're going to try to look at all in different perspectives. We're not going to change the all, we're just going to change the way we look at the all. So let's take as an example light. Can the human eye see light?
Sure.
Obviously, no, it seems like we can, but no, we can't see the light. We just see what the light reveals to us. The light itself is not evident. Understand?
Sure.
Okay, now light travels at 186,000 miles per second. If we bend it through a prism and it comes out on the other end, what do we see?
We see colors.
Excellent. Seven basic colors. Okay, now pretend that you're pointing with your index finger of your right hand to the blue light and with the index finger of your left hand to the red light. Okay, got it? Now, how many lights are you pointing at?
Two lights.
How many lights are there?
If you're pointing at the filter, if the filter is the colors, then there's two colors, one light.
Ah, one light. Still one light.
Right.
So even though the red is not the blue and the blue is not the red, there's still one.
Right.
And one color could be on this end of the spectrum and one color could be on the far end of the spectrum, but there's still one light.
Right.
Okay, now, let's say we have a bright light coming out of the ceiling. And we're sitting in a room. And in between us and that bright light, we're going to put a thick sheet of black plastic that covers the whole room from wall to wall. And we're sitting under that. What do we see? What would we see?
I don't think we see much of the black plastic in there.
Right, we wouldn't see much, but we'd see something. What would we see?
We'd see...
Darkness.
Darkness.
Okay, fine. At least that's something, right? Ever been in a dark room, we'd see something. Okay, let's put four holes in the black plastic. One shaped like a circle, one like a square, one like a triangle, and one like a Jewish star. So now what do we see?
out in the dark, you're not going to be able to see them.
Well, we put the holes in the plastic?
The holes, yeah, sure, you could see, you'd be able to make them out.
We'd see holes, the light coming through the holes shaped like those holes in the ceiling, in the black plastic, right?
Ah. Right.
And maybe we might see those shapes on the ground.
Yeah,
and if there's dust in the room.
Then you would see dust.
Where? Tubes of light.
Right.
Right? So we'd see a circle tube, a square tube, a triangle tube, right?
Yes.
Okay, now with your right hand, grab the square light, so to speak. And with your left hand, grab the triangle light. Okay, now how many lights are you grabbing?
One, essentially. It's all one light.
But you said two, one. So which is it, one or two?
Seemingly, I'm grabbing two distinct lights.
But that's seemingly. What is?
Well, it's all coming from the same source.
But it's still one. Let's take the plastic out.
Right.
You don't see the light still coming from the same source. You say it's one light.
Right.
Now put the plastic back in.
Right.
We didn't cut up the light. We didn't divide the light. We didn't separate the light. It's still one light.
Right.
Okay, so we're grabbing one light. But two beams, but still one light.
Fair enough.
Okay. The Zohar uses an interesting example of this. It says if you're sitting in a house with two windows and you're inside and the sun is pouring into the two windows, the human mind wants to say there are two lights, but we know there's only one sunlight, so those two are really one, right? Okay, under that sheet of plastic, a few feet under that, let's put another sheet of plastic. And this sheet of plastic, let's put 600,000 holes, each a different shape. And on all these different holes, we're going to put a different shade of cellophane. You know cellophane? With a different color. And we're sitting under that sheet of plastic. What do we see now?
They each come out in different colors.
600,000 shapes and colors, all right?
All different.
All different. And how many lights?
One.
Ah, so even though there's 600,000, they're one?
Of course, if it's all coming from the same source, it's coming like
but it, you're right, but I'm saying the room is filled with one light, whether it comes from that source, or it's in that source, or left that source, it's still one light in the room.
Right.
Right. Okay. Now, I don't know if this is starting to make any sense enough, but now I want to ask you if you are the all.
Am I the all?
That was the question, right.
By using my logic, I guess I must be, but it seems that I can't be all there is to the all.
Right, that wouldn't make sense because you're identifying yourself as a person, and a person isn't the moon and everything else.
Right.
But the problem isn't that the all is less or more here or there. The problem is that our consciousness identifies ourselves as just being an individual person. Okay, there's a story that goes on in the Far East I like to tell sometimes about a young man who was very confused and depressed. He didn't know what to do. So a friend of him told him the reason why he was so confused was he wasn't enlightened. And he said, well, what's enlightened? He says, I don't know either because I'm not enlightened, but there's a master up on top of the mountain. If you climb up the mountain, he'll enlighten you. So the boy climbed up the mountain. And sure enough, there's a hut on top of the mountain with a beautiful light coming out of it. And he knocked on the door, and two little guys come running out and say, oh, you can't knock on this person's door. It's a very important master. And if you want to become enlightened, you're going to have to work in his garden for 6 months. And they'll call you in for an interview, and if you get the answer, you're enlightened. He said, 6 months? That's a long time, but I'm going to do it. So he works for 6 months, and his job is polishing avocados. Now, what do you think he's thinking for these 6 months?
Well, if he really wants to be enlightened, it won't be so long, but otherwise
very long time.
It would be a long time.
But he's going to be asked a single question that's going to enlighten him.
So he's thinking about what the question could possibly be.
Exactly. Okay, so finally he's called in, he bows down to the master, and the master looks him in the eye and says, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Well, he never heard of a question like that before in his life. He was thrown for a loop. But he didn't want to waste the 6 months, so he held his hand up in the air in front of the master's face, and he quickly folded it and opened it, slapping it against itself several times. The master picked up a stick and hit him in the head again and again, and he ran back out into the garden, polishing avocados, working for 6 more months. Now what's he thinking for 6 months?
How can I have one question?
Well, he probably was thinking, what is the right answer? What is the sound of one hand clapping? After 6 months, he's called back in, but he's very happy because he figured out the answer. It took him a long time, but he knows he's got the answer for sure. He's called in for the interview. He bows down, And the master looks him in the eye and says, what is the sound of one hand clapping? He proudly holds his hand up in the air, open flat against the air, and he slaps it against the air, smiling. And the master picks up a stick and hits him in the head again and again. He goes back out into the garden, working for another 6 months. This goes on for 20 years. Now, if you want, I'll enlighten you right now, and you won't have to work in my garden. All you have to do is cooperate a little bit, okay? Okay, look at your hands, both of them at one time. Now, don't move your eyes, but you see your hands, your arms, your chest, your legs there, you see? Now, you're all one person, right? That's all one, right?
Right.
So these two are one? All this is one?
It must be.
What do you mean must be? Are you one? Is this one body?
Yes.
So all this body is one?
Everything here is one.
So these two are one?
This is part of one.
Where is it parted, Daniel?
Well, my hand isn't my heart, and my heart isn't my foot, but they're all part of one.
They're not parted. If it was parted, you couldn't wiggle it.
They're connected to the same source. It is my body.
Look at your skin, the skin of your body. Is that all connected, or is it one?
Can't they be both?
Well, connected implies something different, little chunks of it that stuck together. That's not how the body came about. Okay. So your body is one.
It must be.
Why are you saying it must be? Do you have two bodies or 10 bodies?
Well, there's some cognitive dissonance.
Okay, so what you're saying, because you're seeing distinction, that therefore it has to be separation. But your teeth are distinct from your gums, but thank God they're not separate.
Right.
Your left side of your face is distinct from your right side of your face, but they're not separate.
Correct.
Okay, so I want to know if those two hands are one.
No. Yes, but they're distinct.
Okay, fine, but I'm not asking if they're distinct. I'm asking if they're one. Are these 10 fingers one? If somebody grabs you by your hands, are they grabbing one person?
They're grabbing my hands.
They're grabbing you.
Right.
If they're grabbing by your ears, they're grabbing you.
Right.
If they're grabbing by your arms, they're grabbing you, right?
Right.
So then these two hands are one? These 10 fingers are one?
Part of one.
Where is it parted? Why are you parting your hands from the rest of your body?
Because they're grabbing me through my hands.
Okay, but if they grab your ears, you don't say you're grabbing part of me.
You're grabbing all of me.
Yeah, they jerk you right off the ground by
your
ears.
My hands, I would say you're grabbing all of me.
Okay, that's right. The Kepti Shanto says the same thing. He says when you grab a portion, you grab the all. There he's speaking of when you're doing one commandment, one mitzvah, you're carrying the whole Torah. You have the strength of the entire Torah, even though you're only doing one. Have you ever been in the ocean?
Sure.
How big's the ocean?
Pretty big.
But you said you were in the ocean. You didn't say you were in part of the ocean. Right?
Right.
So if I grab your hands, am I grabbing one person, one body, one?
I'm grabbing it all.
Okay, so now I want to know, what is the sound of one hand clapping? You're going to have to go back and work in the garden another 6 months. You blew it. We have to work on this again. We laugh at that, Bozo.
One hand clapping is... all hands clapping.
So make the sound of one hand clapping. Ah, you got out of the garden. Hooray. Hooray. Albert Einstein wrote something very interesting I've written down here. Read this softly here. You're not so, read out loud, but not that loud.
As Albert Einstein wrote, the illusion that we are separate from one another is an optical delusion of our consciousness.
What does that mean?
We are conscious, as conscious people, we have egos, I think he's saying, that we have this mechanism that wants us ourselves to be distinct and individualistic.
But he didn't say distinct, he said separate. So according to Albert Einstein, are we separate from each other?
No, but we delude ourselves to the thing.
To thinking we are separate.
Right.
So if you and I are not separate, what's happening in this room here? Because I see you way over there, and you see me over here, and there's a bunch of space in between us. So what does it mean that we're not separate? It means all existence is one. All existence, all creation is one constant being. That's what he's speaking of. Do you have any questions up until now? We can discuss that before we try to go on to another subject, or the other end of this subject? Okay, fine. So now you know that you are one, and your body is one. Now if I tap you on the head, I'm tapping you. If I tap you on the foot, I'm tapping you. So your head and foot are really one. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, nodding your head doesn't communicate over. Okay, so your head and foot are one. But now, is your head your foot?
No.
So we see that all is one, but all is not the same.
Right.
Does that help answer any of these problems about how the right hand and left hand are different if they're one?
Distinct. The same, but distinct.
Well, I wouldn't say they're the same. They're one.
They're one, but distinct.
Right, like the red and blue light are not the same.
Right.
They're very distinct, but they're not separate.
Coming from the same source.
They never left the source. The light in this room is still here. So it's not only that it came from the same place, because you could say, well, two people come from Chicago, therefore they're the same. That's not what we're saying. We're saying they are the same. Okay, now let's change the subject a little bit. Gravity. Let's say that all gravity ceased, all of the universe. What would happen?
My ninth grade science still serves me correctly, then I think we'd be rising.
Okay, but that's if just the gravity from the planet ceased and the bodies would rise.
Okay.
What about if the gravity that's holding the bodies together also, that's gravity.
We collapse.
Into what? What would be left? An empty sack on the ground?
Our bodies. Just our bodies, yeah.
What's going to be holding the bodies together?
The bones.
What's going to be holding the bones together?
They're collapsing.
What do you mean collapse? What would be left? The film of bone or what?
The bones themselves.
So what's going to hold the bone itself as a structure?
The skin. The tendons, the spine.
But what's going to hold those objects together if there's no gravity, specific gravity to them holding everything in form?
Nothing.
So what's going to be left?
Nothing.
That's right. That's right. If the power that's holding everything together would cease, all the matter, the rocks, the planets, everything would cease. So then what is the nature of the physical thing, of the objects that we're seeing? If all that's here is a power, if that power would cease, all physical creation would cease. Couldn't you say that? Could we say that? Okay, that's another way of looking at it. There's a prayer you say several times a day, many times a day, Boche Ha'olomim, it means blessed be the life of all the worlds. You know that? Okay, now in that sentence we see that worlds is plural. Many worlds, this world and the world to come. But the word life is singular.
Hmm.
Okay, so what does that mean about your life and my life?
They're one and the same.
Same? I don't know about.
One.
Right. There's a difference between one and same.
I was still so confused on that.
Still? Good. Let's work on it then. That's what you're here for, what we're here for. Your head and foot are not the same, but they're one.
Right.
Take a ruler. The right side, where the numbers are small, is not the same as the left side, where the numbers are big, or the other way around, depending on how you hold the ruler. But it's only one ruler.
They're connected through something that's the same. Each have to have some common denominator, which means they're the same.
Well, common denominator doesn't mean same. At that perspective, that would be the same. For instance, when you look at a body, you see that body with your 20/20 vision, you see a person. But if you put a big microscope in between you and that body, what you see, you would no longer call a person, but you would call, say, molecules, zillions of molecules, and lots of empty space. Do you know how much of it is empty space, according to science, by the way? They say 99.9% empty space. Okay, now, these molecules, are they solid? If we blow them up real, real big, what would we see? 60 zillion atoms. That's the picture? Mm-hmm. That's what's going on here? Okay, now, which are you? Atoms, molecules, or man?
All.
Good. Okay, you're all of those. Are those one made out of three, or the three made out of one?
The three are made out of one.
That's right. Because if I took one of those out, the whole thing would go.
Right.
And if the one was made out of three, I could take one out and the other two would remain.
Right.
Okay, good. Now, these atoms, are they solid? We can blow them up real, real, real big, and we'll see that they are 60 zillion quarks, they say. And blow those up, we come, we see that there's 60 zillion gluons. And blow those up, and we keep going and going and going and going. What do you think you finally come to? You told that you, what you come to, you blow it up, no matter how much more you blow it up, it won't change anything. What do you think you finally come to?
Energy.
What about the energy? Blow that up a little bit.
I don't know.
Come to nothing. Because the world has made something from nothing. And what we're doing is experiencing it as something.
Hmm.
But it's made out of nothing, and God continuously creates the world, so if he would cease creating it at any moment, it would revert to nothing. Now, this, back to your point now, when we look at the world with our nothing eyeglasses, we see the perspective of nothing, we see it's all the same. But when we're using our eyeglasses that show distinction, like rainbow colors or people, then it's not all the same. So your so-called underlying common denominator is that it's all one or that it's all nothing. But it's not the same. A right hand is not the same as a left hand. The right hand has the function of the right hand, and the left hand has the function of the left hand. And in order for the body to work properly, everything has to function according to its nature. Okay? Any questions up to here?
I think I'm clear.
You're clear? Okay, now. There's a line in the Torah that says, and we say this line frequently every day, know this day and take it to your heart that the Lord is God. In the heavens above and upon the earth below, there's nothing else. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, there's nothing else? Nothing else than what?
Nothing else than God.
That's what it says, very clearly. If there's nothing else than God, are you God?
That's what it seems to say.
It does seem to say that, but how can that be? God's the creator of the universe, and we're people. We break, God doesn't break.
Must be God filtered down, kind of like that prism.
Okay, but when God filtered down, when the light is filtered down and bent, there's just as much light on both sides of the bend.
Right.
The red is no more or less light because it was bent. It's just more color.
Right. It's different from the other lights.
Different from the other colors.
Right, from the other colors.
Yeah, don't confuse light and colors in this illustration. We'll be back to where we started. Okay. Okay, so if you're God, how come you can't do what God does? Or seemingly can't. I mean, you can't create universes and stuff like that.
Well, just like that color, that red can't do what blue does.
Very good. Okay. Now it can't do what blue does. It can't do a lot more. Like, if I asked your foot, did you learn Torah today? Your foot couldn't say, yes, I learned Torah today. But your foot was there partaking in it. Right? But the foot's job is to walk you to the place to learn Torah. And the brain's job is to do the actual learning.
Right.
But it's still all you. Right? So this is how that all of creation, what we say is all of existence is Hashem, including what we are, including the lowest and lowest and lowest. There's nothing here besides God. Now, how does this change your life to know this or not? Let's say you arrived at the level of fear of God. That's said to be a very, very high level, to come to Yirat Shemayim. So everything you did with the fear of God. Would you step on somebody else's toe on purpose?
Of course not.
Okay, and why not? But answer it from as if you're standing in that position of fear of God. Why not?
Well, because it seems that's all one and the same.
No, fear. That's not fear.
It's like the fear that you would have of stepping on the king's foot.
Right, what would happen?
It wouldn't be good.
Right, because the king would step on your head or something, right? That's fear. That's how you operate out of fear. I won't do any sins because I'm afraid of what will happen to me from doing it.
Sure.
That's fear of God. Now let's say that you come to the level of understanding of that what we've been talking about here for the last half an hour or so. Would you step on somebody else's toe on purpose? Why not? For now, don't tell me from the fear perspective, but tell them from the perspective we've been talking about.
Because that person is one with me.
Excellent. Very well said. That's right. Now, that's love of God. That's love of all. That's even higher than fear of God. Now you're doing all your Torah mitzvahs out of love. Very nice, right? But I like. I wish they could see the look on your face just now. Okay, now, what if you go and to a place to pray, and somebody wants to tie, at the kotel, we see this sometimes, somebody wants to tie their shoe, and they put their foot up on the seat, the chair, and tie their shoe, and then they walk off. Is that an okay thing to do or not?
Got to tie a shoe.
Right, but did he have to put it on the chair to do it?
He could have been down.
Well, he could have sat in the chair that was made for, right, and reached the, that's what's it, right? Well, what's wrong with sitting in, what's wrong with putting his foot on the chair?
It seems to belittle the chair.
Well, the chair doesn't know nothing. The chair doesn't get
dirty
anything.
In the chair.
So what? What difference does it make if it's dirty in the chair?
Because I'm going to tell them to sit down.
That's right. So now if you understand that you're all is one, you don't want to put dirt on your friend's talus, your prayer shawl, when he sits down there, right? So this, if you understand this and you take it to your heart, not just get the idea in your head, but take it to your heart, it's going to change the way you act throughout the day. You're going to be considerate of each other, not merely because you're afraid of the repercussions, but you're going to be considerate of each other because all is one. Now, it said in that line that we read, know this day and take it to your heart that the Lord is God in the heavens above and upon the earth below. There's nothing else. So why does it say, and take it to your heart? If you know it, wouldn't that be enough? Wouldn't you think that'd be enough? But this is the kind of concept that if you're very fortunate, you can get it right now, today, but you still have to take it to your heart again and again, because it goes out of your head and you forget the understanding and you think about other things. So this is a concept you have to continuously bring to your heart. One other line in the Torah, in the Bible, that's very interesting. King Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, said, Yesh echad vein sheni, there's one and no second. Does that make any sense, that sentence? There's one and no second? Because we see there's a first grade, a second grade, the first room, and the second room, and the third room.
Mm-hmm.
So what must he have been talking about when he said there's one and no second?
One force, one power.
One existence?
Existence.
One life, one God, one being. And all this is one, but it's not the same. Okay? Okay, fine. It's been a very nice time speaking with you. I hope you come back again, especially this Friday night for dinner.
Thanks. I hope I just don't have to polish any avocados.
Well, tell me the sound of one hand clapping and you won't.